Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
Reassessing the priorities in the city and county budgets, tonight on Behind the Headlines. Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. We are in budget season right now, both the city, the county, as well as the suburbs. And in this past week, a group of nonprofit community organizations came forward and called on both the city of Memphis and the county commission to rethink their spending priorities, to spend or invest more in various priorities as they see it. And we have two members of that loose coalition of organizations who are with us tonight to talk about those spending priorities and how they see the budget. First up is Cardell Oren, Executive Director of Stand for Children Tennessee. Cardell, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate being here.
We also have Devaney Perry, Executive Director of Building Memphis. Devaney, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
So for a little background, we've done a number of budget shows, or I don't know, a couple lately. For those who maybe aren't as close to it as we are, the city budget is about a $715 million operating budget. Traditionally, that's what's been put on the table, give or take, about a $90 million capital budget. This is a reappraisal year, and I do a very bad version of the assessor's office in which I try to describe what's happened. When the property taxes are reappraised by state law, communities in across Tennessee, counties and municipalities, cannot raise, have to adjust their rates down or up in order that they don't see a windfall, that the overall gross amount of tax revenue from property taxes stays roughly the same. That means that the property tax rate in Memphis has gone down from $3.19 to $2.71. And the county budget, which is similarly sized, about a little over $700 million county budget, $90 million capital budget, with reappraisal, the property tax rate has gone down from 405 to 345. That's what they have to do. And then I will shut up and get Cardell and Devaney in on this. But they are allowed to vote to increase taxes to change that tax rate. And so first up, and I think I'll go to you first, Cardell, if you would give us a real quick overview of what Stand for Children, your organization, is. I'll let Devaney do the same, and then we will get to the various proposals you all put forward. So I'll start with Cardell and Stand for Children.
Yeah, so Stand for Children is a community organizing and advocacy organization. We work with parents, community members, educators, to get them involved in specifically education policy and justice policy and advocacy, but across the board are really interested in education funding and how our community impacts, especially around young people and communities.
And Devaney, same question to you. Give us a quick overview, and we'll talk more later, but of what Building Memphis does.
Yes, Building Memphis, it stands for Build, Live, Develop, and Grow. We are a coalition of community development corporations across many Memphis neighborhoods. We support the capacity building of our CDCs and our community development partners to do the equitable development work that brings about neighborhood revitalization in some of our really distressed neighborhoods in Memphis.
And some of the other, I won't go about, but Bill Dries, who isn't here with us today, but wrote about it in the Daily Memphian, but some of the other groups that are in this coalition, Decarcerate Memphis, MICA, Memphis Music Initiative, My Sister's House, Homeless Organizing for Power, and others have joined together to say, and I'll turn to you, Cardell, first, to say what? What is it that you all are calling for in terms of spending, investing, and taxes?
You know, the foundation of this work is kind of that age-old quote, a budget is a moral document. And so if we think of a budget as a moral document, it's what are our values? What are our priorities? What are the things that we treasure in our community? And so looking at the budget and looking at the process that the city and county were going through, we felt like it was the same old, like we continue to have the same old budgets kind of come up and no new investments, no really game-changing things happening. So around the same time as the city and county were going through their hearings, we got together as a coalition of organizations working on some of these specific areas that we think are important around people and communities and workers and culture and engagement, and said, well, what would investments look like for us? What do we think are important things to invest in? And those include education, public transportation, affordable housing, pieces around workers and all workers getting salary increases rather than just police and fire. So we brought all of these things together to put it into what we call the moral budget to say we can do investments, and we, you know, kind of put it in a foundation way around supporting people, supporting communities, supporting workers, and building culture and engagement. And we think that if we ask that question of what are we doing in those areas for our current budgets, we wouldn't get the answers that we want. So we said, how do we make it clear what the choices are we are making are and what we'd like to see as a community in our budgets and in investments from city and county.
Devaney, how would you frame what you all are pushing for? Anything you would add?
Yeah, I would definitely add that Building Memphis being really neighborhood specific in a lot of our work of our organizations, our member organizations are really centered on how to increase neighborhood capacity as well as the households within neighborhoods. How do you strengthen those households within neighborhoods? So a lot of our work right now is focused on affordable housing. Right now we have a advocacy campaign to city council to pass the mayor's recommendation for permanent and affordable permanent annual funding to the Memphis Affordable Housing Trust Fund. It turns out that we've had this trust fund now for 3 years, and we've allocated $900,000 in the first round of that fiscal year. It was zeroed out of the budget in the second fiscal year, and we are now asking for permanent funding. However, 2/3 of a penny of the city's debt service gives us around $800,000. The CDCs that are our members could really generate about 300 new home bills a year if they have the adequate funding. And if we're talking about the average home cost is $100,000 and that subsidy gap in building affordable housing because of the appraisal issues is between $25,000 and $50,000, which a CDC would really need to make an investment into the housing shortage that we experience here in Memphis, we definitely will need around $11 million. And that's our advocacy ask to city council. Our work within this larger topic around a moral budget, we're really looking at all these different societal factors that really will generate income to both the municipal budgets as well as to our households here in Memphis so that there is economic opportunity spread throughout.
Let me go through some of the proposals y'all touched on here. This is from Bill's article in the Daily Memphian. The coalition has said, leave the tax rates the same, but because property values have gone up on average about 20% across the city and county, that would generate something like $140 million. So people would pay the same tax rate. Those whose property values had gone up could see increases in their tax bills, about 20%. You've proposed, I think, $30 million to MATA, 20 from the city, 10 from the county. You mentioned, Devaney, the $11 million for Affordable Housing Trust Fund, $80 million, I believe, for, and you all can correct me, for funding and housing and services for people who are homeless. Cardell mentioned that the raises that have been proposed right now for just fire and police be extended to all city workers, and $30 million in public education. Cardell, I'll go to you. Did I miss anything? Is that those the raw numbers?
No, those are the raw numbers in the big areas. We've got a couple of other things that are around engagement. So creating positions in county government around budget participation and civic engagement. But you hit on the high notes.
And so far, what has the reception been? Has it been a stiff arm? Have there been questions? I mean, this is up to the city council pretty much in the end. How far have you gotten and how far do you think you might get?
You know, as you all have reported on, and I think Bill has reported on, you know, there are council members who are open to additional adjustments in the tax rate and looking at investments that could come from that. So we've talked to some of the council members about the opportunities for that. We've had some engagement with Mayor Harris and some of the county commissioners about the opportunities to see this come to fruition on the county side. You know, I think that there's some openness to it. I think that in a lot of ways, the conservative nature of the state, and like you said, the state mandate to decrease the tax rate drastically when we have these reappraisals, that I think that there's other people who want to see the ability to take advantage of that wealth that's been created in our communities to invest it in other areas. And the overwhelming message has just been such a conservative nature that you got to continue to decrease taxes, even though the state makes us decrease the tax rate instead of adjusting it, that you don't really look at, well, where are the impacts going to be? And we would say that the impacts are going to be mainly in those places that already have wealth and already have had investments, namely downtown, midtown, Poplar Corridor, East Memphis, and that you don't see property values going up as drastically in some of our other neighborhoods with the greatest needs, you know, actually, you know, Black neighborhoods for the most part that need investments. And to get those neighborhoods to develop, we've got to put investments in them. And so many elected say, we want to do those investments, but if we don't have the revenue, we can't do the investments. And so it's a continuous cycle that we're trying to break out of.
The other part of that conversation that over the 10 plus years that I've been doing behind the headlines and obviously Daily Memphian, Daily News before that, and I'll go to you on this, Devaney, and to get your perspective. You know, again and again and again, whenever I've had business leaders on or business people on, a lot of the economic development people, they will say, well, our taxes are too high. So we're not competitive with Nashville, which has lower taxes. We're not competitive with other cities that have taxes. That we need to get our taxes. $4 at the county level has been this magic number to get under. $3 has, you know, people always focus on get it under that. And both of that, as proposed right now, based on the reappraisal and the reset, those things would happen. And the argument that the business and economic development people, many of them make is, well, if we get the tax rates down and we encourage a lot of investment, then people will benefit. We'll bring jobs in, we'll bring investment in communities. Have you seen that happen? Do you buy that argument about the benefits of lowering taxes?
Yeah, I would say even outside of just lowering taxes, the notion that the business industry can generate economic opportunity for households without actually making the investment into households so that they can generate economic opportunity through a self-sustained and self-sufficient way, I think is a pretty backwards way of thinking about it. And there's also data now that says that Memphis 3.0 has several notions and points that it makes that our economic development strategy has been solely focused on site selection and bringing in businesses and those businesses generating tax dollars if we bring them in at very low rates. However, what we do know is that economic development strategy expands outside of just your larger corporations and your businesses, and economic opportunities and economic activity is generated through neighborhoods and small businesses. So I think that notion of taxes being lowered for larger entities outside of taxes going towards the direct support of our neighborhoods and those persons and households within our communities, I think we do need to kind of shift how we think about our taxes and where those dollars go, how those dollars are set, and also where we are making subsidies.
Can I add just a little bit on that?
Yeah, please. Go ahead, Cordell.
Just to say, you know, to trickle down economics, like that's what our economic development strategy gets down to, whether we're talking about pilots, whether we're talking about this tax structure, that we're saying we have to cut taxes on for businesses to come in, for wealthy people to create jobs, to do all these things. It hasn't happened. It didn't happen in our country when we tried it nationally. It hasn't happened over the multiple decades that's been the overwhelming, you know, strategy for our economic development strategy here in Memphis and Shelby County. And we would say that it is not going to create, you know, jobs in the future, that doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results is, of course, insane. So we have to get out of that loop and we have to change it. The other thing that I think is important is that we always talk about the comparison with other places in Tennessee around our property taxes. But if we start looking at tax burden, which is what we really should be looking at, which is what sophisticated companies look at, then we would know that our tax burden is actually fairly low when we compare to peer cities. That because we don't have an income tax, because our automobile fees are relatively lower, even than Mississippi, that our tax burden is relatively low. And this is the conversation that we should be changing to, so we don't get caught in this, you know, just hamster wheel of going on and on.
I should point out, as we record this on Wednesday, Tuesday night, I believe it was, at the city council, the city came forward and said, well, given some issues with federal funding, stimulus, COVID-related stimulus money, they actually have a $23 million shortfall. I should have said that at the top when I was talking about the city budget numbers. But to that stimulus money, that stimulus money is going to be, it's kind of a moving target. The federal guidance keeps coming on out. The last time we had the CFO from the city on, and Worth Morgan, the chair of the budget committee for the city of Memphis, they thought it was going to be about $160 to $170 million. Have you, I'll go to you, Devaney. I mean, have you seen any, that those, the uses of that money is pretty heavily restricted by the federal government. It doesn't just go in the checking account and you can spend it on anything. Is there an opportunity to get anything that, of your priorities from that bucket of federal money?
From the COVID-related funding, yes. A significant amount of funding has gone to address housing needs, home repairs, as well as those that are experiencing evictions. So the answer to that is yes. However, with regard to the topic of sustainability and having a set aside funding for those issues that are very present and reoccurring and historical to Memphis neighborhoods. That's the funding that we are looking to redirect in the budget expenses.
And make you walked right into a question I had about y'all's proposals. Are they proposals for ongoing funding? Are they 1 year proposals? Are they 3 years? Is it indefinite until the problem or the problems are solved? I mean, help me on the math with that. I guess I'll stay with Devaney for now and then I'll go to Cardell.
Okay. I think Cardell can really speak to the longer term strategy here.
Yeah. Cardell.
Yeah. So, it's split up. So there is in the budget, and we try to do it split out like an actual budget. There are some pieces that are ongoing that we think should be ongoing investments until it's solved. Affordable housing, you know, transit has to be an ongoing investment. So if we invest the $30 million, $35 million they say they need, like that's an ongoing piece of it. And they've got other investments that you can make. Education, of course, is something that you want to be sustainable and ongoing investments. And there's other pieces there. We do have some pieces in there where we make recommendations around ARP funding and where some of the federal dollars could go to and be more directly centered around people and communities based on the COVID and the pandemic challenges that we've faced so far, rather than just consistently using them on the city side to plug the hole in the budget.
Let me stay with funding and sort of the notion of found money, which is a terrible phrase and I shouldn't have said that, but I did. But there is a windfall of sorts that the city of Memphis is going to pursue, which is, and bear with me, we talked about it with the CFO and Worth Morgan a couple of weeks ago. As long-term debt that the city has had for various capital projects rolls off and is basically paid off, it frees up debt capacity for the city of Memphis. And that has what the state has allowed the city to do, and the city's identified $200 million in capital improvement projects. Capital improvement being not salaries, not operating money, but investments, anything from roads to buildings and parks and so on. And we'll talk, I'm leading up to what those priorities should be. They've got $200 million and through a whole lot of machinations, they are able to actually go ahead and get that $200 million now in debt and begin to spend it in the short term, but not have to begin to pay it back for 5 years and it'll be 25-year debt. Are the priorities and the priorities for that, and they called it the debt cliff at one point, I think realized that was really bad branding, and the city is now calling it Accelerate Memphis. Again, this $200 million. It is, I'll do a real quick summary and I want to get y'all's take on this. $75 million for neighborhood improvements, $75 million toward a still developing parks master plan, $50 million toward what they're referencing as citywide assets like FedEx Forum, Mud Island, the old Melrose High School in Orange Mound. I feel like I'm going over here, but there's a bunch of money for streetscapes and infrastructure, fiber for high-speed internet, buying the Southwest Twin Drive-In movie theater for $4 million, $7.5 million for affordable housing. So let me go to Devaney. I mean, there is housing in there. There are neighborhood improvements in there. That's very much in the heart of what you all work on. separate from the budget priorities and the federal money, are you happy with the priorities as they've been laid out for this $200 million Accelerate Memphis plan?
Accelerate Memphis, from what's been explained to us, it will largely follow the anchor strategy of Memphis 3.0, which we do support Memphis 3.0. From our standpoint of community development corporations, we want to know and make sure that community development corporations who hold the visions for development in these communities and public investments in these communities are at the decision-making table. So now it comes down to who is leading the strategy to actually get what these investments will look like and what they will be. We have a guide in Memphis 3.0 as a land use planning guide. However, when you actually talk about community equity, community autonomy, preservation of people, and then also power and justice, how are community members, community development corporations really driving what these investments will look like, the impact that these investments will have on these communities? Because we know that these investments, being CIP, will be surrounding or to new or improving a current city infrastructure, or maybe something that is nearest to a private investment. But the city infrastructure has to make improvements throughout communities. Maybe that will leave some behind, and siloed communities has always been a conversation with regard to investment. But then also those areas where we know they're going to go, maybe there are investments being made in some of those silo communities. How are we making sure that those community members are again aware of it? Going back to some of those strategies in Memphis 3.0, one of them is really about driving community engagement in public infrastructure investments. How are we holding accountable to those measures that have been set forth and approved by the mayor and city council? Those are some of the things that are important to our coalition with regard to Accelerate Memphis.
And I should say before I go to Cardell that we're all close to Memphis 3.0, and we've done many shows on our time, but broadly, Memphis 3.0 is essentially what I would frame as a strategic plan for the city to guide where growth and development happens, where transportation is needed and needs to be expanded, greenways, green spaces, and so on. Those are the high points. I think you can search Memphis 3.0 if you're interested. And it brought a lot of people together. It's had a lot of buy-in by the city council, the mayors, and so on. It's not universally supported, but was very broadly supported. Cardell, back to Accelerate Memphis. Do you support those priorities, or do you know enough about the priorities? It's a lot of bullet points right now, right? I mean, it's some bullet points and some named locations. It is not, and I don't think anyone is pretending to believe that it is a fully baked, executable plan. It's broad strokes. But do you like the direction, at least, of Accelerate Memphis?
I think it's a good start. I think, you know, this is something that we've always talked about, that we should have done this years ago. Like these large scale, like bonded investments to give us the weight to do it. We've seen it in other cities, especially around affordable housing. This is where, when we talk about, you know, less than $1 million going to affordable housing trust fund, and we look at other cities that are doing tens of millions of dollars, Atlanta doing hundreds of millions of dollars just into affordable housing, this is to say this is a good start. And there's additional funding that's available in this debt cliff that would allow you to take out another big bond, like to do some of these things. One of the challenges I think that Devaney, you know, detailed well was, how engaged is the community in this? How do you set this out? And are you parceling it out too much to really see the impact of the investments, so that you can see it impactful in developing neighborhoods and supporting neighborhoods? And then again, going back to this piece around revenue and sustainability, if we don't break out of this cycle, an idea that we can create that we can create revenue and make ongoing investments, we'll do this, and then it'll be a one-off. And things will downgrade from there. We won't continue the investments that we need to do to build off of this one-time kind of detailed piece of investment from Accelerate.
Let me shift gears on you both a little bit. For people not familiar with your organizations, I'll stay with Cardell. Give me a little more on the folks listening, a little bit more about what Stanford Children does when it's not advocating for different budget priorities.
That's a lot of what we do, is advocate. We don't have enough money.
I screwed that up. Thank you for calling me out on that, but go ahead.
That's a lot of what we do around. We've done it in the past around education priorities and fighting for the budget. A lot of the shift to the moral budget came from our work around what we call the Youth Education Success Fund. So pushing for targeted investments on what we focus on, early literacy, health and mental health for young people, and high school success. So we work in those specific areas around that with schools and with the district. We also have started to engage around youth justice and justice-centered work to expand what we know is the need for justice and safety and wellness in our community. And so that's the broadening out of working with other partners, other coalitions, because it's not just about like what happens in the school, but what happens broadly. And we know we've got to change the culture here, move our community forward so that we can see sustainable progress.
Devani, you mentioned working with other CDCs, community development corporations. If you would just do a quick, what is a community development corporation for people who don't know, and what all Building Memphis does?
Yeah, so a community development corporation is an organization situated in a boundary area of a neighborhood that needs added capacity, and it may be experiencing the ramifications of poverty to its infrastructure, its housing, and things of that nature. So a CDC is a 501c3 organization. It is a not-for-profit, but they are doing development, and they are charged with the development and also some of the social elements within a neighborhood and community. Building Memphis, again, we are a coalition of CDCs and other community development partners. And we are working on, we have annual policy agendas. Affordable housing is one of those. Transportation and mobility. We are really big advocates of pedestrian safety, as Shelby County has the largest number of pedestrian homicides and vehicular violence in Shelby, in the state of Tennessee. So those are something that's something that's really important to us. And a lot of the work that we do in the next quarter will be focused on pedestrian safety, just to add to the affordable housing space that we're in right now.
That is all the time we have this week. Remember, if you missed any of the show or if you want to watch a past episode, we talked about the budget, we talked about economic development recently, many of the issues we talked about here today, go to the WKNO website at WKNO.org. You can actually just search for Behind the Headlines WKNO on YouTube. You can also download the full podcast of all the shows from the Daily Memphian site, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. This is the second to last show in my apartment, thankfully. I'm sick of looking at my apartment and behind me. I'm sure you all are as well. We'll be back in the studio in a couple weeks and looking forward to that. Thanks again, and we will see you next week.